Hello there, you're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Friday the 1st of December. Today I'm joined by Duncan Balkan, who is a Watson's Daily Ambassador. Hi there, Duncan, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Much improved on yesterday. Again, sorry I wasn't here yesterday to anyone, any avid followers. Basically because I was in bed yesterday, pretty much sleeping the whole day, because all of us in the Watson household were all ill at various stages of being ill. So I think I got it quite mildly, to be honest. So a lot better today, hence we're back in it, back in the driving seat. So anyway, that's probably a little bit more information than you wanted, but what story would you like to talk about from today's Watson's Daily?
Yeah, so as per usual in our recent times, there's quite a few AI related stories in the news today, but one of them particularly caught my eye. So I want to talk about this story from the Telegraph about PwC, so Big Four accountancy firm, pitching a chatbot that can make deals, allegedly. So So like I said, Big Four accountancy firm, so proper big player getting involved with this sort of thing. They've just launched a new chatbot that they're saying can quickly work out whether an acquisition is worth making or not. So the basic idea is they're going to use this AI-powered chatbot to speed up the due diligence process that would normally obviously take people quite a lot of time, getting it to summarize, analyze huge amounts of client data and documents, and then kind of feedback to the advisory team, kind of guidance, so they can then use kind of be more informed when they're dealing with completing a transaction. So it all sounds well and good. To me, instantly sounds like people being replaced by AI. Now their deals leader for the UK has said that it's not about that, it's about augmenting their teams rather than replacing their teams. Which to me sounds a little bit like corporate spin on we're going to use it to augment and then maybe push people out the door. This is also a company that have recently made like 600 people redundant in their advisory team. So, which kind of contradicts that previous statement about it being augmenting rather than replacing people. Now, I personally think this is really interesting. I think it's an interesting tool. We've spoken previously about this, I think, being a good area to use AI in. We talked about contract law and we talked about due diligence as two areas where you really could streamline the process by using AI. So I think potentially long-term this could replace a lot of jobs. Sorry for anyone involved in this sort of work. I could be wrong, but it does have that feel to it. If it works, I feel like it could do. At the moment, I would say it's probably more of a screening tool more than it is an actual human replacement. But that's I would say, only till it's been proven to work properly. And the other interesting thing is they want to also license this platform to clients in the future. So that then means a lot of people potentially losing jobs, because if it works and they license it to clients, I imagine they'd rather pay a licensing fee than pay out multiple salaries. So it's interesting in that sense, potentially dangerous to some jobs. But the other thing I think about this is there's a few things about using AI to do a human job that have always concerned me. And with this one, speeding up due diligence, they say summarize and analyze data. And one of the first things that came to my mind was, well, what happens if there's an error in the client document that they get sent? Will the AI spot that? Like, I'd imagine a human with lots of experience in the field would. Say, for example, a decimal point's in the wrong place in a figure, or there's an extra zero in a figure. That can make quite a big difference when you're forecasting. Would the AI pick that up, or would it forecast off essentially a wrong figure? And then that brought me on to my second thought, which was, well, if the AI does make a mistake, say it's something like that, or say something worse, like a data breach, who's responsible for that? Is it the company that designed the chatbot? Is it the company that's paying to use the chatbot? Is it the person in the company that's fed the chatbot its information and programmed it, essentially? Where does that liability fall? Because at the moment, you can't guarantee this is going to be perfect. Like I said, what happens if it picks up an incorrect bit of data and forecasts off that? And then, like I said, and if it does make a mistake, whose fault is it? So it's really interesting. Like I said, I can see if it works and they manage to streamline it. This is, like I said, it puts a lot of jobs at risk, I think. But for the time being, I'm still dubious whether it can work, and if it doesn't, who's liable? So I think there's lots of angles on this, but I think it's really interesting to see a big company, a big four accountancy firm, using this technology in a way that I think a few months ago we said, well, this is the most obvious use for it at the moment. So I think it's really interesting. Yeah, what's your take on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I think I'm with you on the whole. The whole thing about it being a screening tool, because the thing is, I think you could use it in different ways. I mean, one way you could do it is you could say you could use it for, let's say you've got a list already that you are doing, and then you can then feed that into the you can feed that into the AI, and then the AI will say these are the top three or whatever it is. Or you could use it as inspiration, potentially. So you could have no idea, be completely blank sheet, and say and feed something in, and then it come out and it helps you. I mean, this is a way. I'd say this is the sort of writer's block way of using it, where I've thought since we started talking about AI, OpenAI in particular, is how I would have thought this could be the end of writer's block, in the sense that, let's say you're an author, you've written a novel, it's gone well, you have a character in there, you're not quite sure what to do with them in the second one, so you could use, say, ChatGPT to say, given these characters, this is what they've done, what do you think was the next thing, what's the next adventure? And then it could come up with different ideas.
I tell you what, there's fans of a particularly prolific TV show that might have quite liked that to be used a couple of years ago. I'm not going to name the TV show, but I remember a lot of fans being very upset that when the script writers decided to write a final series that hadn't been written by the original author yet. There were a lot of people that were quite upset by how that ended. So, like I say, you could use this to come up with multiple different endings and then pick the best one.
That's the thing. I think, I think it could. So similarly, sort of taking it back to this, is that, it could give people ideas, off the wall ideas, and then they can pursue it. I mean, I think it's, like I say, it's a decent enough tool. I don't think it's good enough necessarily to be used on its own. And like you say, someone somewhere has got to take the responsibility for whatever deals are, or how they've come up with it. So someone's going to have to take the fall. But like I say, it might quicken the process. So, I mean, it's good for that. But I would also say, if I was someone, apparently in this article, it says something like 100 people at PwC are currently feeding it, the AI, with non-confidential information and training it. I mean, how would you feel if you're one of these people? Because you're basically sitting there thinking, I'm going to be replaced, but I'm making something that is going to replace me.
Well, that's you're essentially feeding information into a bot to basically work out whether the bot is capable of replacing you or not.
Exactly.
I'm not sure I'd like to do that. I'm not saying anyone would do this, but I mean, surely you'd be tempted to feed it some information to make it go wrong. At that point, I know it's not massively ethical, but do you really want to lose your job to a bot that you've essentially trained?
No, not really. But there you go. There you go.
Absolutely. So yeah, like I said, I thought that was a really interesting story in today's Watson Say. What's your favourite one,
Peter? So I thought I'd talk today about Robin Hood, not the geezer in Sherwood Forest.
No Band of Merry Men today.
No, not at all. But the trading app that gained notoriety under lockdown, as everyone was at home, bored, couldn't do anything, and maybe had some extra money that they had, and they thought that they would get some excitement in their life by trading shares. This is in the US, maybe. Anyway, Robinhood is looking to start up in the UK. It's had a few false starts in the last couple of years, And apparently it's going to launch properly next year, and it's going to offer an American share trading service initially, and then after that there will be at some point London listed shares and ICEs and things that can be traded as well. Now, sounds good. However, I think that it's going to be very difficult for them to do well, because I just get the feeling that we don't, in this country, we just don't really do shares particularly. Certainly, it feels to me like a lot of people will see share trading as the preserve of the very wealthy, or at least people who can afford to put aside money to you know, to do this kind of thing. It's not really something that many people will be really talking about that much. I mean, I suppose the nearest we've got to it, people being interested in trading, is made in recent times is Bitcoin. You know, and you'd have, I mean, you know, when people like taxi drivers start talking about, oh, I've just got into Bitcoin and it's great, you know that that's a time to exit generally. But I mean, there's nothing against taxi drivers, by the way. Just saying that it, by the time it filters through, usually that means it's the top of the market. But I do think that we don't have that. We don't have that culture. You know, when I was working in Japan, admittedly, you know, it was a few years ago, but at that point, they had stockbrokers, like branches of stockbrokers on the high street, you know, all over the place. You could go, you could pop into a Merrill Lynch, a Goldman Sachs, you could pop into Nomura, Daiwa, you know, all of them. You could go in and actually talk to someone. In America, I believe, you know, people, again, they talk about stocks and shares far more than we ever do over here. And so I think that in order for Robinhood to even make any kind of dent in the UK, it's going to have a massive, a monumental marketing campaign to try to change the culture. Now, the problem is that their audience, they're going to be aiming at younger people, I would have thought. Yeah. So in order to do that, they're going to do something on Instagram, TikTok, you know, all the rest of it. You know, they're just going to have a presence on all these different platforms. And in order to get that, you know, really get traction, you need influencers. But the problem is that most recently, you know, these influencers have really had a pretty bad time of it. I mean, Kim Kardashian, for instance, she was one. I think there was an out of court settlement there somehow. Yeah. Then you've got, Tom Brady, I think it is, the American football player who pushed FTX. You've most recently got Ronaldo, for pushing Binance. So all of these things, you know, and I think that the regulations are tightening such that these people won't be able to push stuff like, I presume, like Robinhood's. Yeah. So if they can't do so, one of the things they have to do to change the way of thinking is going to be extremely difficult to do. And it's funny because I at the moment I'm thinking of trying to get a sponsor for this podcast, right? So I mean, people have been talking about it for a long time and saying, oh, you should get a sponsor. I mean, because, you know, it's been going for a while. We've got a track record now, you know, there are a number of episodes. I don't want to get someone, I don't want to get a company that has got nothing to do with the audience, right? If I get a sponsor, I want it to be a company that offers something that is of genuine value to the people that listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I did, when I saw this, I thought, you know, like Robinhood, I initially thought that'd be an interesting idea, because obviously I'm not about recommending shares and stuff. Obviously, that's what I used to do as a living, but that's not what I'm doing now. What I'm trying to do with Watson's Daily is to try to help people, to educate them, you know, on what's going on in the markets and stuff. You can make your own decisions then. So that's the idea. And I suppose if you were to take that further, you could say that maybe share trading is the next thing. But for me, I wouldn't want to do that because I feel that, I mean, I know, and let's face it, Watson's Daily is minuscule, right? And, you know, Robinhood is way bigger, and, you know, they would never even consider this, I'm sure. But even if they did, I would not, because I feel that that's leading people on to a platform that maybe, you know, will lead to people not doing well financially, potentially. And I would not want to be responsible for that. So
I guess, anyway, in a sense, that's the same fine line, I think, that, like you said, influencers have to tread, because there's a really fine line between recommending a product and it being perceived as giving financial advice.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's where people keep falling foul, isn't it? Like these influencers, is the second you're perceived to be giving independent financial advice, you're breaking the law.
Mm.
And unless you're qualified to do that. And I know, like, even recently, I had a pensions talk at work, and the guy that did the pensions talk had to preface the whole thing by saying, I am not qualified, nor will I at any point during this talk give you independent financial advice.
However,
these are the products and these are how they work. But you have to be so careful, don't you? And that, like, that line between, well, these are our sponsors, so we could be then perceived as recommending it. And then is that advising using it? It's a real tough subject. Yeah.
Well, the funniest thing actually was, again, when I was broking, if there, a lot of these like reports and stuff had to be like have some disclaimer somewhere saying that this does not constitute financial advice.
Yeah.
You're like, hold on a minute. That's what we're in the business of doing that. And yet we have to say somewhere that that's not what we're doing.
Yeah.
It was very strange. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I think that this is, you know, this is interesting. Mm. And in theory, you know, it says here, it's sort of only a third of Britons own shares versus 60% of Americans.
Yeah.
So there's clearly a lot of upside potential here, but they have to capture the imagination, I think.
And yeah, and like you said, there's a massive, I think, cultural wall there to break down.
Yeah.
I think I was saying this to you earlier. I've got friends of a very similar age to myself who either were born in America or live in America now.
Yeah.
And particularly kind of around my late teens, early 20s,
yeah,
I like having conversations with them. Talking about financial products was something they did naturally. Like, what's your portfolio? What are you thinking about investing in this time? And almost that thing about putting a certain amount of your salary away every month to invest for your future is something that's just done over there. And we were talking about this earlier. I think there's a kind of a fear of that sort of thing, as a result of fear of financial products amongst the younger generations in the UK, based off the fact we're not educated on them.
Yeah,
like when you go through, like I think I said earlier, you kind of leave school and you don't know how to fill out a tax return. You don't know what pension does or how they work. There just isn't that level of financial education. So it's a real cultural barrier to break down if you want to start encouraging people of that age to invest, because you're taking something that for most of them is incredibly terrifying because they don't know how it works and they've never been taught how it works.
Yeah.
So like I said, it's a huge, I think, cultural wall to break down before you've even started marketing your specific product to them.
Yeah.
So that, particularly, like you said, with the fact that this product or their products originally, when they start, are going to be American shares as well.
Yeah.
So not only is it a kind of concept that people, I think, don't, on the whole, and there are exceptions, but on the whole, don't fully understand, you're then asking them to potentially invest in companies they've never heard of.
Yeah.
Which I think is like a double jump, isn't it? So you've got to invest in companies you've never heard of.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting to see whether they do. You know, we'll see lots of adverts and stuff, and I'm sure that they'll try and do something, you know, very funky and stuff. I expect it'll be something along the lines of, I mean, I don't see Klarna advertise as much. I don't feel like I see Klarna advertising as much these days, but
No, actually, something... when you say that, because we had a Watson's Daily Ambassadors night out last week, didn't we?
Yeah,
which
we did.
Involved me going on the tube for probably the first time since the last Watson's Daily Ambassadors.
Right.
Yeah. But the last time, there were Klarna adverts all over the underground. I didn't see a single one this time.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's... say that about Klarna.
And I wonder whether there's going to be, you know, whether something like that kind of funky, you know, funky kind of irreverent type advertising they'll do over here to try to gain traction, but we'll just have to see, but it'll be interesting anyway to see whether it does work. But as I reiterated earlier on, I think, you know, if we do get a sponsor for this podcast, it will be with a company that brings value to the audience. Otherwise, I'd rather not get a sponsor. And I know that is probably shooting myself in the foot. But, you know, I just, like I said, I'm just trying to, I want to, I know this sounds cheesy, but look, I just want to enhance people's lives who are listening to this, not detract from them. So so that's what it's all about anyway. But anyway, we'll leave it there on that philosophical note. Thank you very much, Duncan, for your thoughts today.
Well, thanks for having me.
No problem. And thank you very much for listeners, for your patience. Sorry about the, like I say, the absence episodes this week, but it should be okay. We'll be going for the next 2 weeks. I think, is it Friday the 15th of December? Probably going till then. But then we'll be off for a bit until the new year. But anyway, until then, thank you very much for your patience, for your listening. Oh, and also, thank you also for anyone who said nice things on the Spotify. There's been the Spotify... we'll see, the Wrapped thing. And I've had some really nice comments from people, which is really lovely, you know, saying, oh, you know, you're my number one podcast, whatever. It's really nice. So I do appreciate that very much. So thank you for those who've done that. And yeah, we'll leave it there. Have a great day, whatever you're doing. And we'll be back again soon. Many thanks.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
All right, bye.